In this way, the meeting place was washed, the entire yard, the raised sitting places, the kitchen, and every other room. This chapter is the cleansing of the Gundicha temple, which we sort of were talking about last night. Mandirir chaturdik prakshalane koile shabayanta purabala matadayaila. Thus all places around the temple were thoroughly washed within and without. Ena kela godyeke subudi sarala prabhura charana yuge dila gatajala. After everything was thoroughly washed, a Vaishnava from Bengal, who was very intelligent and simple, came and poured water on the lotus feet of the Lord. Sejalayapna panakaila tahadeke praburmane dukaroshahala. The Gaudiya Vaishnava then took that water and drank it himself. Seeing that, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt a little unhappy and was also outwardly angry. Jajapi gosaitare hanache santosh dharma samstapan lagi baira maharaj. Although the Lord was certainly satisfied with him, he became very angry externally in order to establish the etiquette of religious principles. Shiksha lagi swarup dakhi kaila tahare edike tomara godiyar ravyavahare. The Lord then called for Swarup Damodar and told him, just see the behavior of your Bengali Vaishnava. Ishwara mandire more pada doyala sejale apanalaya panakaila. This person from Bengal has washed my feet within the temple of the personality of Godhead. Not only that, he has drunk the water himself. E aparade mure kaha habe gati tomar gaudiya kare teka pajati. I do not know what my destination is because of this offense. Indeed, your Bengali Vaishnava has greatly implicated me. Tabe swarup gosai tare gade hata diya dekhe mani purira baira rakhile nalaya. At this point, Swarup Damodar Goswami caught the Gaudiya Vaishnava by the neck and, giving him a little push, ejected him from the Gundicha Puri temple and made him stay outside. Punayasi Prabhupaya Korile Vinaya Agya Aparade Kshama Karite Jujaya. After Swarup Damodar returned within the temple, he requested Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to excuse that innocent person. So, in the modern times, the mood is everyone is equal. Am I any less than you? Right? This is kind of modern times. Everyone is trying to be equal, and that is the philosophy that is kind of being glorified. As this is enlightenment. When we can see everyone is equal. So, yeah, this sounds very enlightened. Right? Of course, it's difficult in all practical purposes, because we remember the book maybe of George Orwell called The Animal Farm. And the animals, they kicked out the farmer and they took control of the farm. Yeah? But then no one was managing anything. So then the pigs, they volunteered. They said, we will manage things, no problem. And then the pig said, but for management it's a little difficult if we just stay in the barn. It will be easier if we stay in the house. And then after some time, the pigs started to walk on their hind legs, just like human beings used to, and wear the clothes also, human beings. And then one day, the truck of the slaughterhouse came, and an old horse was taken away. Wow, then there was a riot, you know, and all the animals came before the pigs and said, and we thought everyone was equal. And the pigs said, yes, but some are more equal than others. So that's a classic. Some are more equal than others. So it's difficult in the world to say that everyone is equal. Because in a way, everyone is different. Yeah. I mean, everyone has talents, right? And everyone has capacities. So how can, in one way, how can we say everyone is equal? In one way, we have to say everyone is different. Someone is a good dancer. Someone is a singer. Someone is a professor. Someone is a weightlifter. You know, what can you do about that? Right? Different natures. But of course, so there is this understanding of simultaneously one and different, equal and also different. Vijavinaya sampane brahmana gavinihastini sunichaiva swapakacha pandita samadarshinaha. The wise and realized person sees with equal vision. He sees with equal vision a dog or a dog eater, a brahmana, an elephant. In his eyes, they're all the same. Because he sees that within the heart of every living being is the same soul. Therefore, he can see all living beings as equal. But then, we make a difference between a tiger and a pussycat. Some distinction is there. So, in this way, amongst the Vaishnavas, although we accept that on the level of the soul, everyone is equal, still, Vaishnavas accept that there are some who are superior to them, that there are equals, and that there are inferiors. How are they measuring it? They're measuring it by spiritual advancement, by how much a person is willing to give his life to Krishna. And those who are giving their life to Krishna, they're being worshipped. So, now Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, during this Gundicha cleansing of the temple, suddenly there was this one devotee who poured water over his feet in the middle of the whole thing and drank it right there. Of course, intelligent, very smart. But according to etiquette, yes, worship must be there of spiritual superior personalities. But no one should be worshipped, have his feet washed in front of the deity. It says here, because in the temple we worship Krishna. So that this etiquette is there, so that no impersonalism can come in, and then we can think Guru is God. Right? No, he is not God. He's never God. He is to be treated as good as God because he is the representative of God, but he is not God. Never. So therefore, that etiquette is there. No one, worship in the temple is for Krishna. And we are, it's a therefore, in temples, in front of the deities, we don't even bow down to anyone. Even our spiritual master, we may bow down with folded hands. That's enough. Yeah. And maybe in the back of the temple, that's different. But not right in front of the deity. Verse. So that we don't make the mistake to start thinking that human beings can become God. There are so many yoga philosophies around that also came from India. And part of that philosophy is impersonalism. To think that the living being can become God. This is widely spread. I was in New York and I met God. He was sitting on a park bench. He was old. One tooth was missing. But he revealed it to me. He told me, I am God. So I said, oh, this is wonderful. After all these years, I never thought I would see you face to face, you know. So many years I've been chanting Hare Krishna. So many years I've been bowing down, but I never saw him. And then suddenly, unexpectedly, in New York, I saw him. He was well disguised, but, you know, maybe he was, right? So I said, my dear Lord, of course I'm very happy that you are revealing yourself to me, but I still have a little doubt in my heart. It's a little bit. Could you just give me a sign to show that you're really God? He says, yes, what would you like? He says, well, could you make those trees on the other side a little taller so that we have some shade? You know, that would be nice. You know? He says, what makes you think that God can do that? I think, like, well, isn't God almighty? He said, that's your definition. Then I told him, I said, well, what is your definition? That God is a toothless old man? Then anybody can be God. Yeah? So yes, if we want to make anybody God, a toothless old man God, right? Or any weak human being God, right? What's the point? Yeah, you call everybody God, but that doesn't make you God. So Prabhupada was pointing out, so there was this in India, this kid, and he was recognized as an incarnation of God. Right? But Prabhupada said, when he has a toothache, he has to go to the dentist. What kind of God is that? What kind of God is that? That is not God. Because he is never under control of the material energy. Right? He's never, ever subjugated to, you know, the laws of material nature. That's for living beings in this world. We all are under the influence of the laws of nature. There's nothing we can do about it. Right? It's the way it is. But Krishna is never ever affected. When it's the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, at that time Krishna was 125 years old. But he wasn't saying, Arjuna, wait for me. Not so fast. Can you help me on the chariot? At 125, right? At 125, Krishna was fresh. Krishna was young. How is it possible? You go. I mean, I don't know how old Mandela is these days. I've lost count. Extremely very. Oh, must be 90 or something by now. Close to it, 93. Yeah. See, it's like Mandela is almost eternal. 93. It's amazing. Amazing. He deserves it. He deserves a long life. Because they stole away 27 years, so he should get 27 year bonus, right? Yeah, at least, I think so. But now he's old, right? Now he's not. We don't see pictures anymore of Mandela dancing or anything like that. A couple of years ago, when he was early 80s, he was still rocking a bit, but now not so much, right? That's what happens, you know, old age, right? Old age. But not Krishna. Not Krishna. Krishna has no white hairs. Krishna's hair is always blackish, not affected by time. Krishna, when Advaita Acharya invited Lord Chaitanya, he invited him for prasadam. And they had taken a leaf of a banana tree. And in the middle they had a whole arrangement of more leaves, and in the middle there was 40 kilos of rice, huge pile, and then on the other ones enormous quantities, many pots with vegetables and so on. And then there was a seat in front of those plates, and then he invited Lord Chaitanya for prasad, and two seats, one for Lord Chaitanya, one for Lord Nityananda. And then Lord Chaitanya said, wow, you've made such a nice offering today. Amazing. Just give us a little bit of the Mahaprasadam. That will be nice. And then Advaita Acharya said, my Lord, you can't cheat me. I know very well who you are. And I know that in Jagannath Puri, you are eating 56 times a day. You can't make any excuses. You can just sit down and start eating. But Lord Chaitanya was saying, but how can we eat like this? But he sat down and he started eating and he was polishing it off very well. All the time complaining, it's too much. Then Nityananda was also eating. Nityananda said, what's going on? Today we have to go hungry. There's hardly anything to eat here. We're fasting. Nothing going on. In this way, they were showing their transcendental nature. And that they were not like limited, you know. Not limited by the laws of nature, by the laws of stomach. Not affected by such mundane, trivial things. They were transcendental. So Lord Chaitanya is transcendental. And this Bengali Vaishnava knew it very well. And therefore Lord Chaitanya could be worshipped in the temple. But because he was acting out the role of an acharya, he said, no, this is not right. So Sarup Damodar then sort of threw the Bengali Vaishnava out. Tabe Mahaprabhur Mane Santo Sahaila Sharikari Duipashe Shabara Vashaila. After this incident, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very satisfied. He then asked all of the devotees to sit down in two lines on both sides. The Lord then personally sat down in the middle and picked up all kinds of straw, grains of sand and dirty things. While Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was picking up the straws and grains of sand, he said, I shall gather everyone's collection, and I shall ask whoever has collected less than all the others to pay a fine of sweet cakes and sweet rice. E Mata Sabapuri Karila Shadana Sitala Nirmala Kaila Jena Nijamana. In this way, all the quarters of the Gundicha temple were completely cleansed and clear. All quarters were cool and spotless. Like once cleansed and pacified mind. Pranalika chadi yadi panivahela nuttananadi jena samudra milila. When the water from the different rooms was finally let out through the halls, it appeared as if new rivers were rushing out to meet the waters of the ocean. So it is just like the mind, which was also cleansed. When the mind is purified, then the mind becomes peaceful. First, because we are attached to sinful activity, the mind is very agitated, like the ocean agitated by the wind. And there are waves of desire all the time because of previous sinful enjoyment. Maybe we were addicted to intoxication, then the mind is agitated, addicted to having sex all the time, then the mind is agitated. But when the mind becomes purified, mind becomes peaceful. The desires diminish and disappear. See, all these desires, everyone's saying, oh, you know, these desires, we'll have a party, this is great. But because one is never satisfied, it's not great. It is not great. This is illusion. Illusion. Out of passion. But it doesn't work. So, actually, in the mode of goodness, one becomes free. One becomes detached. Detached is not the same as renounced. Renounced means we're giving things up. That's difficult. But detached is we're just not attached anymore. If you're not attached, then it doesn't face you. You know? Okay, sure, you know. Yeah. But if you're attached, yeah, then it's another thing. So like the mode of passion and the mode of goodness are very different. You know, like the mode of passion is something like, you know, I mean, did you see that? No, I mean, did you, amazing, did you see that? No, really, wow, what are we going to do about it? The mode of goodness is, did you see that? Yes, I saw it. I mean, what are we going to do about it? Nothing. Right? In the mode of goodness, because we're detached, we don't need to try to get this, to get that. But in the mode of passion, we've got to try to get everything.
You know, I mean, really, like, I mean, we've got to try and get this and get that and have it and possess it all. Yeah. More.
Yes. So in this way, but it doesn't work. Sometimes, for a while, we get a little success.
Oh, it's working, it's working, it's working like anything. Yay!
For how long? For how long? For how long can you keep water in your hands? It runs through the cracks. For how long can you keep money in your hands? Money, money, money. Money doesn't stay. Chanchalam himana Krishna. Also, material love, even that is not going to stay. It's mixed. You said yesterday, like, you know, super baby may be lovely in one way, but super baby may not be so lovely in other ways. And it's like, so love is mixed. Love is mixed in this world. So in the mode of goodness, we understand. We understand. We don't care so much. We don't care. We don't have a big fancy car. Good. Then we don't have to pay big fat bills. So if you have a big fancy car, you have to pay also. Right. It costs a lot to maintain the thing. You have to look after. Always worried about your car. God, I hope no one will steal the car. Oh God, standing outside. Oh my God. You know, oh no, I'm going to Pretoria Temple. Oh no, dangerous place to park your car. There's a few cars went missing here. You know, I park in front of the door, and there's a few that just disappeared over time. Yeah. I remember one devotee came to pick up a djembe, parked his car, locked it, walked into the temple, came back, car was gone. that was quick. So many cars went. There were some people, some Indians, they had a car also. Indians from India, they had a car, and one devotee started really preaching to them. No, no, you can't go, listen. And then he preached and preached and preached. And then when they came outside, the car was stolen. That was also good preaching. Anyway, so ain't got no car, got no worry, right? Got no problem, got nothing to steal. Yeah. Or if you have an old car, you want to steal my car, go ahead if you can start it. You know, in this way, we can be to devotees. We don't have so much, you know. We don't have so much. We don't need so much. That's it. When you don't need so much, then you're happier. Right? The more you need, the more unhappy you will be. Yeah. And even if you have a lot, you still need more. This is the nature of the material world. One man had hundreds of millions. And then he lost it, and not rant. I'm talking big money. And he had hundreds of millions. And then, somehow or other, he lost it. Can you imagine, you know, after that? That's too much. So, therefore, there's something to say for being simple. For just saying, therefore in the Vedic culture, the enlightened way to live is where you say, you don't try to just get as much material things as you can. You just, you have what you need to be comfortable. And then it's okay. And you learn to sort of internally be simple. And that is the higher state of consciousness. But we don't understand. And of course, I mean, but again, we're not saying you have to be poor, right? We're not speaking about poverty. We're not speaking about being deprived in the winter freeze because you have no money to buy clothes. That's not the kind of detachment we're speaking about. We're speaking about have your needs fulfilled, but then stop. But there's a lot of passion going on. There's a lot of people racing down this road, chasing after many things they don't need. And there's a lot of people selling all kinds of things that we don't need. And the whole society is set up like that. You have iPhone 3. Yeah? You can't live, you need iPhone 4. Yeah? Throw it away, iPhone 3, it's rubbish. Now that we have iPhone 4, how can you live with iPhone 3? So, well, yesterday we were so happy with iPhone 3. Yeah? You danced around the room, me and my iPhone. Yeah, and now it's only a 3. Oh my God. And how can you live with a piece of rubbish, a 3? It's outdated. Yeah? Like this, it's outdated and then you have to throw it away and get a new one. So this is creating false needs. And they pay. Psychologists study for years and they pay them good money to manipulate the minds of people, right? To somehow or other buy things they don't need. And to feel, I need it, I need it, I need it. So this is artificial. In Krishna consciousness, we are trying to be satisfied with simple things, because we have something higher. We have inner satisfaction, spiritual satisfaction. Then how much do you need? Yeah. Forget it. Why get entangled? Why make life complicated? Yeah. So this is the basis of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Vairagya vidya nitya bhakti yoga siksartam eka purusham purarta. What's the next word? Kripambu diyatava kripa. Forgot to polish up my slokas. Anyway, the point is that vairagya and vidya, or some simplicity, some renunciation is required for everyone. Yeah? Everyone has to learn to say, no, I don't need it. Yeah? As simple as that. Yeah? Not from whatever you see, looks good, I must have it. Looks really good, I must have that too. Oh, and that looks good as well, I need that also. Oh, look at that. I need that, man. Yeah, I do. Oh. And this, I can't live without it. And I need so many things. No, one has to get over this. Let's get over this. Just say, no, it's okay. I don't need it all. But of course I need Krishna. And oh yes, I need kirtan, yes. I have so many needs, but spiritual needs. But material needs, what's the point? What is the point? A man lives in a big house. You can just see on the other side of the street, just go for a walk. There are houses that are enormous, enormous. And there's big dog. Yeah? And there's a good chance that in his next life, this man, who is now the owner of the house, comes back as a dog. He'll become the dog. He's so attached to the house, but because he lived like a dog, he will become a dog. Then he can become the guard dog in the same house. You may think it doesn't happen like that, but it does. And it makes sense if you think about it. Because he has behaved like a dog. He lost all the good karma he had. As a result, in the next life, he doesn't deserve any more wealth. He behaved like a dog, become a dog. But he was attached to that house. All right, then become the guard dog of that house. One life master, one life dog. This is the nature of karma. Yeah. So, Karma is something like, you know, static electricity, you know, like you are rubbing and you get electricity, right, by the friction. If you walk on a nylon carpet on your socks, right, and you know, you can walk up and down, and if you touch metal, get a shock. Right? I don't know if you ever had one of those, but I. And that's static electricity, not ecstatic electricity, but static electricity. And such static electricity is just like karma. We do it to ourselves, right? The more friction you create, the more it comes back. So the more we go this, it's such a beautiful world. It's such a wonderful world. It's not such a wonderful world, right? There are wonderful things in the world. I admit that. I agree with that. But you got to be positive. Why I got to be positive? I mean, no, you got to think positive. That's fine. But the negative also happens. Yeah? So why I got to think positive? I got to think realistic. Yeah? Think positive. It's not positive. I think positive about spiritual things. I don't think positive about material things. I don't. Because it ain't all positive. You know, I mean, last night I was talking to someone who works here in a laboratory, and they are trying to make vaccines, you know, and here in Pretoria, and they're bringing in smallpox, right? So it's like, said in Oxford University in England, they have some really good smallpox, right? Enough to wipe out the whole city of Pretoria, right? And they're going to bring that here, huh? All insulated and packed and so on, that it can't escape, we hope. Fingers crossed. Right? And then, we make a vaccine, right? Because there is such a thing in the world as smallpox. Right? And I remember in my school, they used to come and take us, right? Once a year, they used to take us to this healthcare center, all the kids of the school, and then you get all the injections. And I remember this. It was like going to the butcher, you know? All of us walking there and being herded like animals to this place. And I used to be one of those kids that would run away, but it didn't help, you know, because then they'd catch you later. You know? Oh, my God. So, is it all sweet in the world, right? Think positive. No, it's not all sweet, right? Every day, so many people die, so many accidents. Anyway, hospitals are filled with... I don't want to sort of paint all the misery, but at the same time, it's there. And Africa knows it, right? Because Africa is not the continent where life is just so easy, right? And there's a lot of heavy things on this continent. Yeah? So everyone is aware of it. So that's the reality. Happiness and distress in this world. So why get so involved with it? Why get so bewildered by all the beauty? But don't you see? Oh, what a beautiful lake. It's a beautiful lake, but inside there's a crocodile. It's beautiful. Beautiful lake, beautiful. But there's a crocodile inside the thing. Yeah? I mean, so before you put your toe in the water, you'd better check it out. Yeah? If there ain't no crocodiles. That's the way the material world works. There are crocodiles in the material world. Therefore, maybe a beautiful lake, but I'll say, no thanks. No, that's very kind of you. Don't really feel like a swim. But it's hot. I know it's hot. But I'm okay. No swimming today. No thanks. No crocodiles. So that is the nature of material existence. There is always a crocodile. Therefore, we are not getting so much entangled with material things. We keep material life simple, what we need, and then we get into spiritual things. And we get our happiness and satisfaction there. Then we get a higher taste. Then we don't need. Then we don't want. So this is the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Charitamrita is the world of the higher tastes. Today we're warming up to it, and tomorrow we're going deeper into it. Every day, a little deeper. So we're beginning to look. We're preparing with this Kundicha Marjana. It is the chapter that is leading up to Rath Yatra. So leading up to Rath Yatra, Lord Chaitanya is cleaning the Gundichin temple. Leading up to Rath Yatra, one must clean the heart. We're going to serve. We're going to serve Lord Jagannath. We're dancing for the pleasure of Jagannath. And we're thinking about flooding the place with the mercy of Jagannath. Rath Yatra is about mercy, giving mercy. See, it's not just from, hey, you know, this is our party, you know, get out of the way, this is my party, you know. No, Rath Yatra is like, there is all this mercy that it's like we're going around and distributing the fruits. One year in Soweto Rath Yatra, we're like distributing all these fruits. We're going through this neighborhood, quite poor neighborhood, you know. And it's like these two old people, and I had a pineapple for them, you know. And I gave them like a whole pineapple, and they were like, wow, a pineapple, you know. And I mean, this country is full of pineapples, right? Full of pineapples, yeah. They live in the country of pineapples, but somehow or other they can't afford a pineapple, you know what I mean? God, you know, I was glad to give them a pineapple. And then I got so fired up that there were no more fruits, right? I said, what do we do now? But the cart was decorated with fruits. I said, let's distribute all the decoration as well. You know? What do you care about decoration, you know? Just like, distribute it, you know, give it out, right? Give out the mercy. This spirit, you know, is Rath Yatra. That's Rath Yatra. We, in Calcutta, in Rath Yatra, we had a truck of bananas following the Rath cart, and all the time loading more bananas on the cart and just throwing bananas. So I had this, like, this one guy with a golden arm, and he would throw, you know, really far into open windows and everywhere. He was good, you know, he was good. I'm not as good as he was, but, you know, I prayed to Krishna for help, right? And then I was on my last banana, and there was a guy, he was standing there next to the road with a stack of eggs, you know, and he said, Krishna, give me the power. And I just like, bang, you know, gave the guy the mercy, the banana right in the middle of the eggs. He got the mercy, right? No meat, fish, or eggs. We're going bananas. In this way, it is a festival of mercy. Everyone gets it somehow or other. Everyone. I saw in Durban Rath Yatra, Kavi Chandra Maharaj running up and down, skinny and old as he is, you know, running up and down from the chariot to give some mercy, to give something, you know, some prasad, and bring it to really like bums that were living on the street. Right? That is the spirit. Everyone should get the mercy. Then Rath Yatra becomes exciting, very exciting. So we're getting in the mood now, and that's what we're doing today. By this Kundicha Marjana, by cleansing the heart, by thinking, yes, let's give out the mercy somehow or other. And the more we do, the more the Rath Yatra becomes a program of giving out the mercy, the more ecstatic it becomes. And then nothing can stop us, you know, nothing. One year we were in this Rath Yatra, that was just the year before Nrisimha Maharaj took sannyas. It was a few weeks before him, or whatever, it was not so long before him taking sannyas. And then it was raining buckets, you know. I remember the speech that we gave on the chariot was about that it may rain buckets, right? But the rain of mercy is bigger than the rain of water. And therefore, we'll just go for it. And then we went for it. And I tell you, we were jumping in the rain like madmen. And fish were swimming past, you know. I mean, that's how much water there was, you know, believe it or not, you know. Big fish. Serious. Yeah. So in this way. And Nrisimha Maharaj, believe it or not, went wild. He doesn't do it very often. Yeah. But when he gets wild, he does get wild. And he's leading this amazing kirtan. And he can do it. It takes a little time before he does it. You know? Generally he's so peaceful and so on. But that time really, wow, his alter ego came out. It was really, yeah, that's, so Rati Yatra does that to people. It does that, you know. Rati Yatra is an event. You sort of think, well, I'll go and I'll get into it, I'll dance a bit, I'll sing a bit, I'll do something. But if you get into it a little, then something about Rati Yatra takes you beyond yourself. And at one point, you know, something comes out that surprises even you, you know. God, is me. It is. It is. So that's exciting. And then after it's over, you think, well, that was okay. Let's do it again. And again, and again, and again. That's Rati Yatra. So, it will be nice. We're looking forward. Okay, your turn. Any comments, any questions, anything like that? Marcy, yeah.
Hi, you're talking about having been material difficulties in the world.
Ah, well.
I was just discussing with someone. Sometimes astrologically you can look and you can see that it's a particularly a period that you just have to endure and endure. It's
oh boy.
Like some kind of situation. So how much should we try to endeavor to sort of relieve that? And what will be the best consciousness? It seems that's where we're stuck.
Yeah, well. It's natural to try and, you know, avoid trouble. So to some extent we can keep a little bit of a distance of trouble. You can be stupid and you can walk straight into it or keep a little bit of a distance. So that we do, but when trouble comes on its own, you can try to fix it, but if you can't, then we just somehow or other, you know, try to ignore it. As good as we can. But not that we just... So some tolerance is good, but not extreme, you know. I mean, if your leg is about to fall off, you may have to get it screwed back on, you know. In other words, we also take care of things. But we're not going to be the whole day, you know, like in anxiety, oh my God, like what can go wrong, you know. They have this cartoons, The New Yorker, really good cartoons. You find them on the internet. I mean, you know, and so they have this group of people sitting around a table, you know, and like they have these people. They are a think tank, you know. They sit there, the think tank, and they got it. Like, this is not a think tank. This is a worry tank, you know. And there's a worry tank sitting around the table. And one says, you know, what if something will go wrong? And the other said, what if nothing will go wrong? the worry tank, you know. I mean, you can worry about. You can worry all the. You can always worry. You know? There's always something to worry about. There's nothing to worry about. Yeah, so forget it. So we take care as good as we can, and you know. then what can you do? Otherwise, you can stay in bed all day. Try to avoid trouble under the blankets. But then trouble will meet you there. Nah. But I'm not too worried about trouble, you know, because we have a lot of positive things. And so I'm positive, very positive, but about spiritual things, not about material life. I'm not optimistic about the material world. You know, it is broken and you can't fix it. Yeah, and that's it, you know. I mean, the material world's broken. It's an old broken car that can't be fixed. You know, if you fix one side, somewhere else it will break. It's one of those. You know them. Me too. My first car was like that. You had to go with a hammer and hit behind the right wheel in the back, and then it would start. Don't ask me why. But the guy I bought it from showed me the trick. You know, so like you hit here with a hammer, and then you start it, and it would start, right? Serious, no. It's good. Good security also. Yeah, well, you can quit, but then you also got to swallow the consequences. You know, then you may never have your own house. So then it's a little more difficult to have a woman, because maybe she wants a house. Or then you got to find a woman who's, if you still want a woman, then you have to find one that doesn't want a house. Anybody here? I'm just checking for you. You know? Huh? I couldn't hear it right. I'm sorry.
Or one who can afford her own house.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but you get the point. You know, you're only going to school because you want money, and, you know, so that you can maybe at least rent a house or get a house and, you know, maybe iPhone or whatever. You want all those. That's why you're going to school. And if you decide to forget about it. I did. When I was 17, I one day decided, I'm fed up with school. I ain't going no more. Yeah. I just couldn't get myself to go anymore. Yeah, it was too much. So I didn't do it. And then my father was very angry, and he said he wouldn't give me any money. And he didn't. I said I was going to India, and somehow or other, my mother gave me a little money, and then, I worked a little bit, got some money, and went to India, and India life is cheap, so I lived very cheap, and it was okay. I lived on like 4 rupees a day, what is that? God, I think $1 is about 50 rupees, is that it? Okay, it's about, let's say 50 for easy calculation. Huh? 50 rupees, and how many rand to a dollar? Seven? Okay, seven, so 50 rupees, $1. Well, then four is, okay. Who will calculate?
30 rand.
No, not 30 rand. No, no. 4 divided by a I need paper. My brain can't do it. Dhruva, you're supposed to be a Gujarati. Are you a Gujarati? Are you a Gujarati? You must be able to calculate these things. How much 4 rupees is in rands?
70 cents.
Okay, 70 cents? Okay, it's done. She did it. So I trust you for it. 70 cents a day. Live on 70 cents a day. Huh? I was eating. It's like, you know, I wasn't living in the Ritz. Sometimes I was sleeping somewhere outside. But it was okay.
That must have been a long time ago.
Well, that was a while ago, yeah, sure. Yeah. Now it's not 4 rupees, but now you can do it at 40 rupees, 7 rand a day. A long, long time ago.
You mentioned the mode of passion and how it is trying to create. I understand the mode of passion, and I want to ask a question about relationships that I have with my family life. I understand the mode of passion in those relationships in regards that, you know, we tend to fall under the illusion that I need you, I can't live without you, you are everything to me. But I would like can you please give us an example of relationships in the mode of goodness? And what is the purpose of such relationship and relationships?
Now, first, I have to scratch my head about that question. Well, in the mode of passion, right, we are just trying to really enjoy this world to the max. So, some passion is there. Right? So when we desire any relationship, yeah, then we desire, that means we are still passionate. Yeah? We still want to enjoy. So there's an influence of passion. So therefore our goodness, right, is not pure goodness. It's mixed with passion. And it's not that all passion is condemned. But purified passion is passion that is accompanied by goodness. So we say restrict then, you know. Like, okay, one relationship, marry, right? Instead of like this one, that one, everywhere, and, you know, hit and run, right? Leave, and the women have all the kids by themselves, and they just get out of control, and society's going to the dogs, right? Instead of like, okay, family life means have kids, and bring them up also. Bring them up with a father and a mother. Yeah. Make them devotees. Yeah. Then you can. So that's mode of goodness mixed with some passion. Yeah. When you have pure goodness, well, then you're a pure devotee. Yeah. So then you're both pure devotees. Nandan Yasoda. They're married, but they're only interested in Krishna. They're pure devotees. That's different. But for us, there is some influence of passion, but we around it, we build a life of goodness. Yes, and that's why we say we get married. All right. So you're attracted, no problem, but then get married. And of course, in modern age, you know, men may sometimes go, get married. I know that happened to me also. No, before Krishna consciousness, I was living with a girl and I wasn't married. But then, okay, then when we became devotee, then I became a devotee. After a while, she also became a devotee, and then she told me. So now we have to get married, isn't it? I swallowed, but I did it because of Prabhupada. Because that's what Prabhupada taught, and that's what he wanted us to do. So, okay, well, okay, if that's the way Prabhupada wanted, I guess I'll do it. Even in Africa, it has to be like that. Although that hit and run program is kind of popular.
How can one be non-attached and not be mistaken for being too much of that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, someone was hit in an accident and, you know, and injured, and someone else, and then a family member stood next to there crying, and then some renounced person was saying, "Look at this Maya, yeah? Look at this Maya." Then your renunciation turns into hard-heartedness. Yeah? That's not the idea. That you're so detached and so cold, you know, you don't care about anything. No, we must care. Yeah, we must be full of love and kindness. Just like children, you know, like, I mean, a kid has a toy and then the kid loses the toy. It's the end of the world, right? Now, we're adults, you know, we can say, like, come on, you know. It's only a little toy. There's nothing. There's nothing. It doesn't help with the kid, right? If you say that, you know, it's nothing. Right? When you deal with a kid, you have to put yourself in the emotions of the kid. And you go, no, really? Oh, no, you lost this. Oh, we're looking everywhere. No, is it here? Is it there? No, oh, it must be somewhere. No, and everyone is looking. No one finds it. But then the kid gets over it, right? Because, you know, you share the feelings. And you give it a new toy and it's okay. Right? So in the same way, a self-realized person is detached, but is not cold. He understands that the suffering that people are going through is for them is real. He can see, okay, you know, they could be free from this so easily, but they can't just do it in a moment. So he's full of compassion for the suffering of people who are in Maya. Yeah. In one way, the whole world is Maya. Okay, it's Maya. So, but you know, to emotionally just walk away from it like that, you can't do that. You know, only if you're full of, if you're completely transcendental. Yeah. But at the same time, full of compassion for the feelings of others. So too detached means when you become hard and cold in your detachment and don't care for the sufferings of others. Too detached. No good.
Thank you so much. There's one detachment for being to avoid drinking and being cold. If a devotee is asking another devotee or being asking a spiritual master, say he wants to get married, and the spiritual master or another devotee says, "I don't think you are ready or should now," then if you say that you sound like you are cold or you're not favorable, then what should the spiritual master or the devotee do?
Yeah. Well, you know, spiritual masters are sometimes tricky. One devotee came to Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, I don't like Indians." Prabhupada said, "Oh, you don't like Indians?" So, "No, I don't like Indians because they're very tricky." And then he realized, but Prabhupada is also Indian. And he said, "But not you, Prabhupada, but not you." Prabhupada said, "Wrong, I'm very tricky." He said, "I'm very tricky. I tricked you all into Krishna consciousness." So the guru is sometimes trying with the disciple. So if someone comes, when a brahmachari comes and he says, "I want to get married," generally the first answer is, "Forget it. Right? and just to see if he comes back. Right? So we just say no. Generally, we just say no first time. Nah, forget it. And if he comes back again, say, no, I really want it. Okay, then we start to take him more serious. At one point, we say, all right, sure, do it. And the only reason why we say no at first is because it's such, you get so entangled. When you're alone, and life is so simple, and when you're married, life can be, you know, same for all of the girls, same thing, you know, like, I mean, just wait, you know, now life is easy, they're alone, what do you need, you know? God, a family, my God, I mean, what you need, you know? That's why we're a little bit hesitant about marriage, but, you know, say like, well, if you don't really need it, think about it twice. But otherwise, go for it. Better that than hit and run. Yeah. No. Better be married and actually make a Krishna conscious home. Because a Krishna conscious home is very nice. Yeah. I mean, it's as much centered around Krishna as the temple. Yeah, and you really can see that. You can really become completely Krishna conscious at home, in a Krishna conscious home. That's why it's good for devotees. And when your wife is a devotee and you're a devotee, then actually it's okay. You know? Be devotees together. Have kirtan. You can see little Jayananda. It's like imitating Kadambakana Swami. Isn't it cute? He's going to be good. We can't wait for Jayananda to grow up. He's going to be super kirtan leader. I can see it coming. He's going to be better than me.
So what that means, then the devotee will be giving the blessings to that devotee's asking for advice. So it's more like it's fine to go ahead and have a blessing with
you. Yeah. And if somebody is already in the world, you know, sort of, right? He never became a full-time brahmachari, and, you know, and he wants to get married, good. Get married. Why not? I mean, but of course, it's to be a devotee, it has to be a little different than the material world, you know. I mean, I just saw a cartoon, you know, like of someone showed a Superman cartoon who got married, and then after marriage, okay, she was expecting, and then she poked a finger in his chest, you know, sort of. She wanted this, she wanted that, she wanted many things. Yeah, but like, that's the material picture. Right? That's the material picture. You have this, you've seen this video clip of the cowboy? It's a water advertisement, right? A bottled water advertisement. And this cowboy comes on his horse, and he's out in the bush, and he hears this voice, help! Female voice. He looks around, sees nobody. Then he follows the sound, and there's a cliff, and there's this woman hanging on a branch, and she's wearing like a little red skirt, right? Low cut, you know, and she's hanging there, help! And blink, 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 blink. So he goes like, just a moment, he runs to his horse, ready to get a rope, you know, to pull her up. And then suddenly, he sees himself with her in a caravan, right? And her mother just comes out of the caravan, right? And there's this kid, and the kid is just hitting on the side of the caravan with some stone, bang, bang, bang. And he sees the picture of himself sitting outside the caravan, totally fried, right? And he takes a sip of his water, And then it says, a moment of clarity, and that's the water. And then he jumps on his horse, and he just shoots off. Okay, it's a video clip, you know. I mean, right? Now, what to do? What should we do? Is that the program? And that's maybe in the material situation, the program. But if you're going to try and put Krishna in the center, then both have to sacrifice. Yeah. Then it's also not that the lady after marriage should gain 20 kilos and sit there, you know. I mean, those kind of mundane examples where a woman just becomes so demanding, then both should be ready to sacrifice and say, okay, we need some things, but we're going to be devotees. We're not going to waste our time with so much material development. Then marriage can be very nice. So if you marry, right, marry a devotee. Then it should be okay. There's always a risk. And if you don't want to marry, well, that's also good. We have a brahmacharya ashram, a brahmacharini ashram also. Then you have to be a little detached. But so, don't get me wrong, I'm for marriage, but to put Krishna in the center of the marriage. Krishna.
In terms of the mode of goodness and the mode of passion, in relation to what ISKCON is trying to do, God centers and spread Krishna consciousness, should it be more in the mode of goodness or in the mode of passion, if maybe we want to assist Srila Prabhupada in, say, aggressive preaching, building centers, and things like that. My first thought is that if we were more like in the mode of goodness, we'd just chill out and not be able to run centers.
I understand. It looks like that. Like, it looks like our idea of the mode of goodness is you sort of sit peacefully under a tree and, you know, chanting with the birds and, you know, and totally satisfied. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, tweet, tweet, Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram. I don't need anything else. Tweet, birdie, birdie, Krishna, Krishna, happy, happy. Yeah? For Krishna we can become active. Yeah, but the mode of goodness means we can be very active, we can do all these things. We can sit down in a big manager, in a swivel chair, in front of a huge computer, right? In the mode of goodness, and do all this work and like anything. And then we can be detached. And we're not like, I love my computer. You know, it's like, you are the number one in my life. You know, right? It's like, you see the point? So you can deal with all the things of the world, but you're not attached. When you're in the mode of passion, you get attached. You know, I like this chair, you know, since I'm in charge here, you know what I mean? I'm calling the shots, you got it, you know what I mean? Then you've become attached. Right? So, but in the mode of goodness, you do the work, but you're not attached. So as soon as it's over, forget it. Go back to the Bhagavatam, and now go back to something peaceful. But then for service, all right. Got to drive a car. And then, hey, God, this devotee is really passionate. No. You want the key? There you go.
Is it more like being passionate about service? Is it something like that?
Yeah. So for Krishna, you can drive the car in goodness, or you can drive the car in passion. You know, in passion, you get attached to the car and start to sort of think, you know, this is my car for my service, and no one else can drive this car. You know, and you get attached to the car. In goodness, no, you're not attached to the car. You're just looking after it for Krishna, using it for Krishna. But in principle, you can see a car is in itself not such a good machine. It's a demoniac machine, actually. You know, I mean, if you drive a car, the first hour, you're still a human being. The second hour, you sort of become one with the machine. And if anyone comes, you're kind of under your wheels. You just want a flamethrower, you know, and like burn to ashes. Which is pretty, pretty rough for a vegetarian. So cars bring it out of you, you know what I mean? It's an aggression. It's an aggressive machine. So what's so good about a car? Just a little nice paint, a few nice chairs. The power, you know. It's ridiculous. One mistake, it rips your body to threads. Ugly things. It's an explosion motor right in front of you. Huh? If I'm put a big explosion engine and nothing in between, would you sit there? But because I put a little bit of a dashboard that looks fancy with some nice clocks, go like, hey man, ooh, this is cool. Right? If it put you in a chair straight in front of the engine, you said, even if I pay you, you know, you wouldn't sit. You said, forget it, you know. This job stinks, so don't take it. But I put a nice panel in between and now you're ready to sit. You know. So happy. BMW. Speed freak. Passion.
To then do we, it seems like we have to be a little bit spiritually advanced to be in the word of goodness, because now you have to distinguish.
Yeah.
So is it, because
it comes gradually, because the good thing is that if you use the car in devotional service, even when you're totally in the mode of passion, and you're driving the thing and you like it, right? And you're, hey, this is good service, you know. Then, you know, but gradually, because you do it for Krishna, you get purified, and then the ignorance and passion disappear. Tadara just tamo bhava kama lobhiyas chay. Through devotional service, the influence of ignorance and passion disappear. So no problem. You get purified automatically. And in the beginning, of course, we bring a lot of passion with us. And then you just engage that passion. But it can be a little tough, you know. Like, I mean, we had that. See, Prabhupada went to America because the Americans are a little passionate. You know what I mean? So, and then, you know, and then all these yanks, you know what I mean? They were going to distribute books, you know. And I remember, like, how it was, you know, like, when I came to the Hare Krishnas, they would just take you in this van in the morning and just take you there and then give me this book, you know. Just get out of the van, you know. Get out. Like, distribute that book. You know, and it's like so passionate. So much like the army. It's just too much. Too much. All these heavy, passionate guys. But yeah, we just engaged our passion. That's what Prabhupada did. Okay, you're passionate? Okay, use it for Krishna instead of for Maya. Then it will get purified. Like, yeah.
What if you've chosen a career that in an industry that is like in the mood of passion, like,
yeah,
all the time?
Yeah.
How do you, I don't know, change it to the mode of goodness or devote it to Krishna?
Sure.
How do you, is there a way to work around that? Cause
well, I know what you mean, you know, because it happened to me in Krishna consciousness. I joined the Hare Krishna movement, and I really wanted like a simple life. I didn't want that. And, you know, I never wanted to have anything to do with a house, because my parents had a big house, and they were always talking about the house. And I was so sick of the big house that I didn't want a house. And then I became in charge of building Prabhupada Samadhi, and it was so passionate, you know, all day long.
Yes, is the cement there already? What's going on? Where's the steel? And oh God, there's a strike. We have to have a meeting with the laborers right away. Okay, what's going on? Okay.
All day long, like this. So, such a passionate engagement. And I did that for a number of years, and I guess Krishna gave it to me to burn up some passion. But then at one point, you know, I said, now is enough. So if you have a job and a career like that, go through it, but make a plan, you know, a long-term plan to get out of there and get a better life, you know. There's no need to go to do it till you're 65 or something, is it? I mean, you know, but maybe when we're young, we got a little more shakti. So it's also really hard to just, you know, before I was Krishna conscious, I told you I lived with this girl, right, that I later got married to. Well, what I didn't tell you is that she didn't join at the same time as I did, and then I went to visit her, and I was a devotee, and I went to visit her because I had some attachment. Right? And then she had moved to France. Okay, so I went to France and stay there on this, so in the countryside somewhere. So I come to this house, and it's a house just made of stones, nature stones, a roof on it. The water is from a stream, right? And there was like, and then under the house, she was keeping goats, right? Goats. And in the morning, she'd let the goats out. They come back at night, and she was like milking the goats, right? And then, so I was there, you know, and it's like, she's milking goats. You know. Yeah. Okay, we're milking goats here. And then, you know, and then my job was to water the lettuce, the salad, and the tomatoes. And, you know, for a little while I had a job in a cinema, and at that time they played the Sound of Music, right? And I saw it about, I don't know how many times I saw the Sound of Music. So I know the Sound of Music very well. And there's a song in the Sound of Music. And the song is, high on the hill lives a lonely goater, yalla la 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 la, hee ho. And that was me. And I was going, God, oh my God, oh no. You know, and I was just watering the lettuce. And I was going, I ain't going to last, you know. I ain't gonna last. I was too passionate for something like that. I said, like, this ain't for me, you know. I gotta get out of this place, you know. And I told her, I said, like, look, you know, we ain't gonna stay here. This is too much. I'm going crazy in this place. So, if I would have been more in goodness, maybe I would have been happy to just chant Hare Krishna, live off the land, but I didn't have that peace of mind. I needed some action. So we went and got some action. So you can't artificially, you know, just live so simple. But after a while you've had enough. But to make a little career and to sort of prove yourself to yourself is also a lot of people have to do, you know.
Yeah, I feel that too. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Okay, Hare Krishna, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada, Kijaya.